Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new internet provider for fundamentalist Muslims, AmeriQuran Line. With new features like face-to-isolate communication, secure money transfers through PayPalestine, and triple encrypted email services through LinkedIn Fidel, AmeriQuran Line is the best way to enjoy the 7% of the internet that doesn't directly conflict with your worldview. Join now and get the free Detonator mobile app. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
I don't think we condone wife beating these days, but something's got to be done to make her
physically.
Thursday, it's February 28th, and when I asked for more reviews on iTunes, I meant good reviews, but thanks anyway. I'm your host, No Illusions, and from New York, New York, this is The Scathing Atheist. On this fortnight's episode, a school board in Jackson, Ohio decides there's nothing explicitly Christian about a picture of Christ. Eli Bosnick will join me to try to fuck up the rhetorical meaning of the phrase, "Is the Pope Catholic?" And I'll try to figure out what all these little knobs on my new mixer do. But first, the diatribe. I'd like to talk about being the only atheist in a room full of theists. It's a diatribe I like to call, "There is to a God, now pass the fucking string beans." Because that's usually where it comes up. It'll be at some social event or a family gathering, you'll be sitting around the table minding your own business, and suddenly those seven fateful words will come up. Somebody will say, "So you don't believe in God, huh?" And you don't want to have the conversation, you don't feel like playing Stump the Atheist. You even try to distract them with something like, "Hey, look, your kids are on fire," but it never works. They're in their zone, you know? They lean in really close, and they put on their best profound face, and then they'll pose the challenge. The challenge usually comes in the form of a question, and the question usually starts, "So how do you explain?" And that's where I stop them. I'll say, "Hey, man, I'm going to let you finish your question and everything, but before you do, I'd like to point out that my ability or inability to answer whatever question you're about to ask has nothing to do with the existence or non-existence of God. When I say I don't believe in God, I'm stating a lack of belief, not a claim of knowledge. I'm not an expert in the origins of life or the cosmos any more than the next guy, and failing to be so doesn't disqualify me from atheism. What's more, whatever question you're about to pose is also one for which you don't have an answer. I know that you think you have the answer, but my guy has superpowers times infinity doesn't really count at all. But by all means, carry on." I don't want to dissuade him. After all, it's pretty easy to argue with a Christian, since they really only have those three different arguments that they use. So they'll throw out Pascal's wager, or the lunatic liar, or Lord Shtick, or the first mover argument, or whatever, and I'll refute it in whatever way I refute it. Sometimes you'll even get that sophisticated theist. You know, the one that went on that their internet and looked up ways to stump atheists. And that's always fun because you get to hear them try to pronounce words like abiogenesis and flagellum. And you can refute these points too if you want, but there's usually no point. Most of the time they don't even understand the argument they're regurgitating enough to know when they've been countered. So you'll sit there and you'll suffer the slings and arrows of their tortured logic, and you'll come out on top, but eventually the tone of the argument will change altogether. It'll no longer be a rational discussion on any level. It'll turn into something like, "Well, I don't want to live in a world without God," or, "There is to a God, now pass the fucking string beans." And that's when the real nature of the argument comes out. That's when it becomes obvious that this was never about logic, it was never about reason, it was about emotion. It wasn't about the world you observe, it's about the world you want to observe. Eventually, you'll have to come to understand that there is no logical reason to believe in God. If there was, atheists would believe in God. We got where we got by using logic, and believe me, if there was a shred of evidence to suggest that I got to live on for eternity in Space Disneyland, I'd take that deal even if it meant I couldn't have fish on Fridays. But even knowing that logic will never work, you're still going to try to employ it, you silly little Christians that stand between me and a second helping of mashed potatoes, so I'd like to make a small request of you. Before you bring your logical argument to me, I want you to take a deep look at it and ask yourself, if this was evidence going the other way, in other words, if this was offered as proof that God didn't exist, would it sway you at all? If I walked up to you and I said something like, "I'm going to prove to you that God doesn't exist. Now let me tell you about the bacterial flagellum." Would you listen to anything else I had to say at that point? And if the flagellum evidence ends up going the other way, would you give up believing in God? Are you subscribing to all the flagellum blogs and newsletters just so you can know for sure if this God thing holds water? Look, you're never going to win an argument with an atheist by using logic. We're better at it. That's our thing. you have to admit going in that yours is not the rational argument. If you insist on arguing with atheists, at least be honest with yourself about where your belief comes from, and I'll give you a hint. It's not your brain. So I open the door and some jackass is telling me that Jesus died for my sins. It's early, I'm tired. I put on my crazy look and I say, a lot of people have died for my sins.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining us for the headlines this fortnight is Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to inform?
Hello, no illusions. As you said, I'm Heath Enright, and there's nothing clever about our names.
Now, before we jump into our lead story tonight, I should know that the Pope is still stepping down. Of course, we've known that shit for weeks, but that hasn't stopped the media outlets everywhere from covering it nonstop, as though it somehow remained newsworthy even after everyone knew it. In fact, I've spent 2 weeks combing through news items for this segment, and like far too many altar boys in the past, I've been up to my balls in bishops and cardinals the entire time. So what follows are the few non-papacy-related nuggets I could dig up in the morass of ass-rapists and ass-rapist enablers. In our lead story tonight, the House of Representatives recently passed H.R. 592, a bill that would allow taxpayer money to be allocated to houses of worship as part of FEMA federal disaster grants. The bill, which passed by an overwhelming 282-vote margin, was created in response to recent caterwauling by Christian leaders over FEMA's refusal to grant churches and synagogues relief money after Superstorm Sandy. There are, of course, numerous compelling reasons not to grant federal money to churches, but strangely, Christian leaders have chosen not to address any of them and instead opt for a policy of crying, whining, bitching, and flailing around like wounded animals. Take pastor, author, and late-night accident attorney infomercial clone Paul DeVry's recent op-ed in the Christian Post. Rather than tackling the constitutional and logical concerns one might have against giving taxpayer money to organizations that don't pay taxes, he instead chooses to obscure the issue with a series of points that can easily be refuted in three sentences or less. Now, that was a challenge, Heath. You up to it?
Game on.
All right, number one. The policy treats churches as outsiders. After all, why should a group's devotion to God make any difference when it comes to public policy?
That's why they should be paying property taxes rather than being treated differently in public policy because of devotion to God and getting a tax exemption. If they were paying taxes this whole time, they would, in turn, be eligible to receive federal disaster aid. That's how taxes work.
That was three sentences. I think I could do it in one. Hey, you just proved our point, jackass. Number two, this discrimination could open the door to other risky discrimination. Will the government stop providing churches with firefighters and police officers?
They should stop providing them with police, firefighters, roads, water, electricity, freedom of speech, and any other government-provided privileges, unless they pay taxes. And even if they did pay all the same taxes as everyone else, churches are clearly not the most important thing to rebuild.
Well said. Number three, the policy ignores the immensely positive roles churches have already played after Superstorm Sandy, and then he lists how many millions of dollars churches donated and raised for victims.
Don't they justify their tax exemptions by citing their benefit to society? They're honestly trying to say, the reason we should get tax-funded aid without paying taxes is the same reason we don't pay taxes. That's like saying right. That a disputed book is valid because in several passages within the disputed book, it indicates that the disputed book is valid.
Right, and not to mention that, hey, look how much money we had to give away is a kind of shitty argument when you're asking for money. And finally, my personal favorite, DeVry's number four point, blocking FEMA grants, this is a quote, by the way, blocking FEMA grants to churches is to pretend to be ignorant of the continuing soul care needed by the many and various victims.
Yes, soul care is pretty important. I guess we could always feed starving children with the bullshit that churches consistently feed their parishioners. And, of course, you know, deep-fried figurative cannibal wafers would be good soul food, I guess.
Anyway, the bill will now go to the Senate, where we expect it will die quietly.
Kind of like the way God died.
Actually, yes, it'll probably be resurrected by Easter. Anyway, taking a page out of the Catholic playbook, a Baptist group has fired the independent investigators that were looking into the child sex abuse allegations against a member of their group mere weeks before the findings of the investigation were scheduled for release. The Association of Baptists for World Evangelism, or ABWE, has terminated the investigative firm Godly Response to Abuse in the Christian Environment, or GRACE. They cite a laundry list of general complaint about GRACE's investigative techniques, especially, one would speculate, the ones that result in them finding massive culpability within the group. Grace has issued a response to the allegations, pointing out that ABWE refused to meet with them to address these allegations, repeatedly breached their contract, refused to disclose documents, refused to make witnesses available, wantonly delayed the investigation, and have a much crappier acronym.
Well, what they got going on reminds me a little bit of the Internal Affairs Department within the Gestapo.
Oh, really? There was an Internal Affairs Division?
I think there was. I think they were called Hitler Examines Internal Legality, or HEIL, H-E-I-L.
Strange that that acronym would work so well in English.
Yeah, it's another nice coincidence. They made sure that atrocities were carried out with dignity and grace.
Yeah, comparing Baptists to Nazis. That's all going to go over real well with the Watchdogs. In other news, Heisman Trophy winner, Christian evangelist, and former third-string New York Jets media mascot Tim Tebow has canceled the planned April appearance at the First Baptist Church in Dallas. The church, which is led by controversial pastor Robert Jeffress, is decidedly anti-gay, anti-Islam, and anti-Mormon. Tebow, who claims to have only recently realized that this church is even more ridiculous than average, announced the cancellation on Twitter, but added, quote, "I will continue to use the platform God has blessed me with to bring faith, hope, and love to all those needing a brighter day, except the ones who are fans of whatever unfortunate team has me on its roster."
If God wanted Tebow to be a star QB and a big spokesman for religion, why did he give him the throwing ability of Helen Keller's less coordinated little sister? He looks like a drunk redneck throwing a folding chair at a bowling alley fight. He looks like he's throwing a gallon of milk, but without the container.
And I apologize to all our international listeners who could give a fuck less about all these American football references. Sticking with a regional focus here, Oklahoma becomes the latest in a dishearteningly long list of states that are pushing some cretinous law that would give creationism a foot in the door of public schools. Republican State Representative Gus Blackwell has introduced a bill which he, of course, vociferously insists has nothing whatsoever to do with religion, claiming, quote, "I propose this bill because there are teachers and students who may be afraid of going against what they see in their textbooks." And in my mind, it's about damn time somebody stood up for the right of students to ignore all of those facts in the curriculum. I mean, what gives these textbooks the authority to determine what is and isn't a fact, other than school boards and textbook guidelines and knowledgeable authors and federal and state educational mandates and rigorous review by experts?
Can't students study falsehoods at church like they always have in the past?
But you don't understand. Blackwell promises with all his heart, so help him God, that this bill has nothing to do whatsoever with the, you know, decades he spent working for the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma. It's not religious at all.
Is he honestly claiming that he intentionally erased his subconscious?
My guess is that would not be the dumbest thing he's ever claimed. In other news, a horrible bitch is suing New York's Department of Education because they did not grant a religious exemption to vaccination for her 5-year-old daughter. Proving definitively that there's no stupid like religious stupid, she argues that, quote, "To inject invasive and unnatural substances into God's divine creation is showing a lack of faith in God and his way."
Well, I forget which verse, but I'm pretty sure the Bible does eloquently suggest that lawsuits against public school districts are a good show of faith in God and his way.
And finally tonight, Jackson, Ohio has become a central front in the battle for the proper separation of church and state. A recent lawsuit by the ACLU and the Freedom From Religion Foundation charges that a portrait of Jesus that hangs in a public middle school illegally promotes religion and stands in direct violation of the First Amendment.
Those Jews are always rubbing our smaller noses in the fact that they had Jesus first, aren't they?
In case we haven't pissed anyone off yet.
Well, it's just the Jews.
Rather than politely acknowledging their error and removing the portrait of Jesus, school officials have dug in their heels and cobbled together an argument so disingenuous you almost expect them to use the word quantum at some point.
Damn godless hippies trying to take down our Jesus poster. Somebody better stand in the way of this progress. Is that approximately their argument? Something like what I just said in that accent?
Technically, I'm sure the accent's right, but I think their argument's actually even worse. They say that the portion of the wall is reserved for clubs within the schools to place pictures of, quote, inspirational figures central to the club's meaning and purpose.
Well, to get me pumped up before a big game, in my locker, I would always keep a little figurine of the sports god named Ball. I think he stood for good sportsmanship. I really idolized that little guy.
Well, you know, of course, this is just the Now you see it, now you don't pay no attention to the man behind the curtain legal defense they're using. But the layman's defense is the same one that they always use. It's the one they used when they tried to justify slavery, when they opposed women's right to vote, or, you know, stood up against gay marriage or validate circumcision. It's been there a really long time. How could it be wrong? Anyway, that does it for headlines. Thanks for joining me, Heath.
Anytime. Glad to be here.
When we come back, we'll be joined by unlikely papal candidate Eli Bosnick.
He sounds Jewish.
I made a request in last fortnight's calendar for help finding a good online source for atheist, humanist, and skeptical events in Australia, and I got a few responses, but I really have to single out one listener in particular. @WorkMX on Twitter seemed to have taken this as a personal challenge and helped out a lot, so I decided that on this episode I'd devote the calendar section entirely to March meetups in the land down under, and I dedicate it to @WorkMX. Appreciate your help. On March 13th, the Brisbane Rationalists are meeting from 6:30 to 8 and encourage anyone who enjoys rational conversation in an informal environment to join them, although I'm sure if you show up in a tux, they won't turn you away. On March 20th, we have a few events worth noting. The Central Victorian Atheists will be holding their monthly gathering at the Albion Hotel in Kyneton. I've gotten some mixed advice on the pronunciation here. All free thinkers in the area up for an evening of godlessness are encouraged to attend, regardless of how they'd like to pronounce it. Also on March 20th, in Adelaide, the Humanist Society of South Australia will be holding their monthly meetup, as they do on the third Wednesday of every month. The meetup runs from 7 to 9 at the Weed Sheaf Hotel. Moving 1,400 kilometers due east on March 24th, Sean Faircloth, author of Attack of the Theocrats, will be appearing with A.C. Grayling and other secular speakers at the Sydney Opera House. This appearance will kick off a national Reclaiming a Secular Australia tour organized by the Rationalist Society of Australia and the New Zealand Association of Humanists and Rationalists. Additional appearances include March 26th at Melbourne University, March 27th at the Dammit There It Is Again Kyneton Mechanics Institute, March 28th at the Wheeler Centre in Melbourne. For a full calendar of appearances, including stops in Perth and New Zealand, check out the links on the show notes for this episode at scathingatheist.com. That'll do it for the calendar this fortnight. On our next episode, we'll turn our eyes to Austin and break down the schedule of events for American Atheists' 50th annual meeting, which I hope to be attending. As always, if you're involved with or aware of an atheist, skeptical, or secular event that's in need of some free publicity, feel free to email me or send me a tweet. You'll find all the contact info along with the links for all the events covered on this segment at scathingatheist.com. There's been a lot of speculation in the media about who will succeed Benedictus as the head of the Vatican. Some point to elderly white man Timothy Dolan from the Big Apple, others to elderly white man Angela Scola, and still others suggest elderly white man Mark Ouellet from Canada. But some wonder if the election of yet another frail, geriatric, soft-minded virgin is really what the church needs. Some suggest that the conclave go bold. After all, does the Pope have to be old? Does he have to be European? Hell, does he even have to be a Christian? So in hopes that we can spur the conclave into taking a much-needed step in a new direction, we at the Scathing Atheists would like to throw our wholehearted endorsement behind a dark horse candidate for the papacy. Eli Bosnick isn't a cardinal, he isn't ordained, he isn't Catholic, he isn't Christian, and in fact recognizes fully that God is a convenient fairy tale fabricated by people who want to avoid work and still reap rewards, which in my mind makes him the perfect candidate for the Vatican's top spot. So Eli, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So, in a nutshell, why do you want to run for Pope?
Being an atheist gives me an angle that I think a lot of cardinals, a lot of those older white men you were just speaking about don't have. You know, it's fine to say that the wafer turns into the body of Christ, but let's just do a thought experiment here, just so you can see what I'm going for here. So for instance, a lot of people don't believe in the transubstantiation. Imagine that I'm the Pope for the moment and I say, when I bless this wafer, it turns into the body of Christ. What would you say to something like that?
I would say bullshit.
Okay, but do you know where black holes come from?
No, well, yeah.
Oh, so you don't know where black holes come from?
Well, no, I know where.
What about dark matter?
Dark matter,
I
have
no idea. Do you know everything?
No, I don't know
everything. You see that garbage? That's the kind of garbage that the Catholic Church needs to integrate into a modern setting, right?
I see.
Modernize. That's my hope.
And that's the argument you're going to bring to the conclave.
Well, no, the conclave is an entirely different sect. You have to understand that these are virgins who have spent their lives pretty much entirely in the company of other men, being told very explicitly that they aren't angels, but they are definitely not humans. And you got to appeal to the advertising there. I'll give you an example of some of the posters that I've printed out so far. Vote for Eli Bosnick. You might grow wings.
I like it.
Right? They don't know that they're not going to grow wings. Again, dark matter, black holes. You don't know that's not true. What about love?
What
See,
about
garbage arguments. They can't really. It's a series of nonsense.
Well, and infallibility comes with the job. So if you say they have wings, they have wings.
They have wings, unless they're a bunch of atheists. One of the things I want to run on that this is really good. This is a leaflet, so it's a little bit longer than they'll probably be used to.
No bumper sticker, but
no bumper sticker, but it's a little bit longer. It's so. According to Corinthians 15:14, if Christ be not resurrected, all our prayers are for naught. Come on. Come on. Come on. Even the Bible's like, hey, just in case this isn't true, you should calm down. Right? And that's really the whole message that I think the Catholic Church needs to come across.
So they need to water down the whole religious thing that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. If we can embrace, and by we I mean the Catholic Church that I'll soon represent, the pseudo-spirituality movement, which has no face, you know, use the word energy just all the time, about anything, doesn't matter what. Take credit for things that aren't yours. You know, you're having a good day? Great energy today.
Yeah.
It's a great day for energy. It doesn't mean anything. So by contrast,
you can't be wrong.
I am not wrong.
I'm loving it. I'm loving it. So that brings me right into my next question, which was going to be how you're going to turn around the attendance numbers. And it seems that you're going to do so by appealing to the spiritual but not religious.
Right. There's that, and there's also, I mean, there needs to be an element of promise, of marketing to the new Catholic Church. I don't know if you can see the T-shirt I'm wearing here, but it does say, Eli Bosnick for Pope, I will not rape and torture children for realsies.
What about all of these priests that have joined the Catholic Church to rape these children? Yeah, some of these people are going to have to be in your corner.
And that's a valid claim. I mean, it's simultaneously, how do I, as Pope, appeal to, you know, the what I would call the left wing, who are against raping children, and the more conservatives, who are more for raping children within the church environment. And the truth of the matter is, you can have it both ways. I'll give you a great example. You know, gun control. You can make stricter laws on gun control, right? It doesn't mean you can't own guns. So, for instance, one of the new policies that I've introduced, and this is a little bit longer than this, but it's called the Don't Get Caught proceedings. And a lot of it has been, I don't want to say sloppy work on the part of the church, but I mean, you know, you have the right idea when you rape a deaf kid. You have a better idea when you rape a dead kid. You know, we have 40% of the hospitals having some Catholic affiliation in the United States right now. How many children? St. Jude's? Come on. Tell me a kid with cancer can fight me off? Absolutely not.
And he's not going to be able to come at you 30 years later.
Right,
with
30
some
later.
Claim.
Oh, he's going to tell his parents. No, the kid's dead next week. I mean, it's called the Saint of Lot Causes for a reason. So, yeah, I mean, it's about balance. Also, you know, giving them a larger expansion. And this is sort of a two-fronted fork at this point. So, for instance, a lot of people are critical of the Catholic Church, you know, condemning condoms when AIDS is so prevalent in Africa. So you introduce condoms, and you use those condoms to fuck African children. Did I just blow your mind?
Yeah.
Because I blew my own.
Right.
You want to mix it up? Maybe get an Asian kid in there.
Or a South American kid, which brings us to, obviously, one of the things is going to be working against your candidacy here. One of the few places left that really takes this whole Pope thing seriously is South America. There's been a lot of call for a Latino Pope. If you're voted in by the conclave, one of your first acts is going to have to be something that's going to placate these South American Catholics.
Absolutely. And there's a huge contingency in South America right now for a South American pope, or at least a Spanish-speaking pope. And to that, I think if I can announce it on Scathing Atheist.
Oh, absolutely.
I will be changing the transubstantiation from the traditional wafer to a Dorito.
I can see that pushing over that last remaining hurdle of South Americans all the way into the Catholic corner.
Not just that, but also instead of using the word Jesus, I will, of course, be referring to him from this point forward as Jesus.
Of course.
Yeah, and I think that will make, I think that'll satisfy our South American contingency, and it will also get us backing from Frito-Lay. I've had some initial very good positive meetings. You know, hey, if they can do tacos after midnight, I'm pretty sure they can do our Lord and Savior. I'm kidding. It's not real. It's all joke. It's just a ridiculous joke. Poor people just believe anything because they're sad. Oh, I want to live in a golden palace. It's going to be so great. I'm going to fuck so many kids.
So, like superheroes and mob enforcers, when you become Pope, you get to change your name. You get to take on a Pope name. Have you given any thought to what your Pope name will be?
Absolutely. I mean, the pattern was actually already set. As early back as the 70s, we know that Pope John, you know, first introduced the liberalization of the Catholic Church, of condoms and the hell being an idea. Pope John. After that, John Paul jumps on the bandwagon, of course, with his further acceptance, his acceptance of gays into the Catholic Church. I mean, really wonderful things before he's shot. Benedict, of course, breaks that cycle, but I, of course, will be picking it back up again with John Paul George. So I will be John Paul George, and then whoever follows me, hopefully, will be John Paul George Ringo.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent. I like it. All right, so can you give us some examples of the type of papal bulls we're likely to expect from Pope John Paul George?
I'd like to beatify Christopher Hitchens, and just generally get some hipper things going on. The dress, me in something black and slinky, small, you know, something a little classier. Listen, I love the long flowing look, but I mean, if I'm going to go long and flowing, I'm going Elizabeth II. You know, I'm talking 3 feet wide, white lace, foam, and you know, I do like, and I don't want this to seem like I'm just going after Benedict in this, because that's not nice. You know, that's not what I'm going after. For instance, Benedict, of course, made a great stance this year in making a political statement in his Christmas message this year. The first pope in almost hundreds of years to condemn a people in his Christmas message. You know, usually they get on, and I want to take up that challenge. So, for instance, my first Christmas message would be: it seems that 50% of the people who work at Staples know what they're doing, and 50% really don't. They just have no idea. I mean, I want 14 copies of 8x10. That's all I want. It's your goddamn job. Just make the copies. That's my Christmas message. But I think it's important, you know. I've got some slogans here. I want to know what you think of them. So the first one here is Eli Bosnick for Pope. Mm-hmm. Only against gay marriage if both chicks are hot.
Okay.
Okay. Eli Bosnick for Pope. Only against condoms if she's on the pill.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, this is a little bit more personal because they do go into the personal Inquisition history. Seeing as I am a magician, Eli Bosnick for Pope, his magic tricks are better than Jesus.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought that would
nice.
Be work a little bit of the of my kids show material. Do maybe the magic coloring book or the bunny out of the hat on Easter. Everybody loves bunny out of the hat.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe do an actual change. I get a cracker, and then I switch it out real quick for a piece of human flesh.
Oh,
people go crazy for that.
Yeah,
they'd love
yeah.
that, right? Do it on the TV.
All right, so really quickly, if our listeners want to hear a little more of you, get a little more from you, where can they find you?
They can see me on Twitter at Eli Bosnick, E-L-I, B as in boy, O, S as in silly, N as in Nancy, I-C-K, on Twitter, Eli Bosnick.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you joining us today.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
I wanted to respond to a couple of quick emails before I close out the show. First, a correction, how quickly we forget. The Pope announced his retirement, and within days, I'm already forgetting the asshole's name, apparently. On episode 3, I accidentally called him John Ratzinger. Quick slip of the tongue while my mind was focused on a pretty crappy John Ratzenberger joke. Sorry about that. Kind of kills one's credibility when one does shit like forgetting the Pope's name. Anyway, on to a more serious correction. I woke up to a pretty compelling comment on the blog on Sunday. John took me to task for repeatedly calling ex-Benedict a Nazi in the last couple of episodes. As he points out, and I will readily admit, mandatory membership in the Hitler Youth does not a Nazi make, but rather than frame this simply as an ad hominem, John hits me where he knows it'll hurt. It's not just an ad hominem, but a lazy one. After all, why go after a spurious connection to Nazism when one could just as easily point to all the horrible shit that he actually did without being forced to by the state? So I apologize for calling that sexist, homophobic, child-rape-enabling, child-rape-insuring, genocidally anti-condom, thoughtless, heartless, antiquated, purposeless, money-laundering, hypocritical, superstitious, felonial, Palpatine look-alike, a Nazi. It won't happen again. That does it for our show, but if you want more, there's more. The interview with Eli went on a lot longer than I expected, and when I cut it down for the show, I left a lot of great stuff on the cutting room floor. If you want to hear the full version, check out scathingatheist.com and click on the Extras tab at the top of the page. I want to thank Heath and Eli for joining me, and I want to wish Eli good luck in his bid for the papacy. I encourage you to follow him on Twitter, if for no other reason than to see pictures of him wandering around Manhattan on Ash Wednesday with a smiley face drawn on his forehead. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our Countdown to Austin edition. Between now and then, check out our erratically published blog and follow us on Twitter. If you like the show, help us spread the word by leaving a good review on iTunes. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. Hold on, I gotta help the Vatican make some smoke here. All right, I'm ready to record.